Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Tim Dillon Show. We are here. Spring has sprung. We have the spring background. I believe that is the Tulip Festival in the Netherlands. And a beautiful statement of spring and of hope, of new life. And I'm very hopeful and I'm very positive. And I don't care how bleak it gets, I believe that things are going to get better. I like this new leader. By the way, I'm bullish on this new leader. I'm going to have a little trouble pronouncing his name, but he's because, by the way, I was always saying Ayatollah Khomeini, but it's Khamenei or something. I just realized that. But, oh boy, here we go. Mojtaba Khamenei. I'm bullish on him. And I think we won the war, and I think it's time to leave and give him this country. And a lot of people are saying, well, we're starting off on the wrong foot with him because we killed his father, his wife, and maybe his daughter, right? We kill his daughter as well? Well, you know, maybe he didn't like his wife and his father. You know, here's the deal. You can't ever know the inner dynamics of any family. So, you know, sure, I'm sure he was startled by the killing of his father, wife, and daughter. But I think on the flip side, this is a new day for him. He gets to be the leader. He can get another wife. He may have had another wife. He may have multiple wives. That's part of that thing they do. Because a lot of people have been saying, rightly so, like, hey, well, we killed this guy's father, wife, daughter, his family, and that's probably going to make him angry and like kind of like attacking his country and killing his family. He's going to even be more dedicated to getting a nuke because that would have prevented this. So there is that school of thought out there, you know, that he's actually going to be more dedicated to enriching uranium to make a nuclear weapon to prevent another attack by the U.S. and Israel. You might say that, but I think this guy might be good. I don't know why. I just have a feeling about him. I have a feeling about him, and I have a feeling about this whole thing. I know that we're sending more warships to the Middle East and Marines, but I still think we've won and we're done. I know it's the Pentagon's moving additional Marines and warships to the Middle East as Iran steps up its attacks on the Strait of Hormuz, according to three U.S. officials. I still think we've won, and I think people should communicate to Donald Trump how much we've won, how glorious this victory has been for all of us, how exciting it's been to see this, how grateful we are for this, and that we should now just go home and think about it as a great, glorious memory of the past. But, I mean, the liberals will fuck it up. If he goes, I won, we're done. The Democrats will be like, you didn't win anything. You actually lost. And he'll go, you're all right. And then nuke everyone. So whatever this man needs to hear, really, whatever this guy needs to hear, he's at the end of his life. He's endorsing Jake Paul for president. He doesn't care what happens next. That's the thing with Donald Trump. He doesn't really care what happens next. So whatever this guy needs to hear to get him out of this war, tell him. Tell him that. Whatever this dude needs to hear so that he can get us the fuck out of there, because this is, and listen, obviously we all support the U.S. military. That's why we don't want them dying. For literally no reason, in Iran, unfortunately. Now, I know people will attack me for saying that. They will say, well, you're dishonoring their sacrifice. What I'm saying is that if we get a crazier leader than the one we had before, I don't get it. But Trump is just kind of on a farewell tour. And take a look here. He's endorsing Jake Paul for political office. And you really have to think to yourself, we do deserve everything we get as a country. You know, like we really do deserve it. There's certain things that people get in their lives they don't deserve. You know, somebody gets sick or whatever, you get a bad car accident. But, you know, this country deserves everything we get. Everything we get, we really deserve. I don't know how much of it anymore can be blamed on outside forces, you know, or even these billionaires that are, we know, evil and bad, a lot of them. But the common person here also is unfortunately really sadly culpable in a lot of this. You know, the people that are cheering on this war in Iran have no fucking clue why we're there. They don't care. They're happy to just see violence. You know, they're happy to see things blow up. They're at a bar in Florida. They're excited about the Ayatollah getting whacked. They don't know why. They don't know what Iran did to them. They're just happy to see violence and chaos. And those are the people who are culpable for what this country is going to get. Make no mistake, we're going to get it. What this country is getting, those are the people who deserve it. Those are the people who deserve it. When the gas spikes and we're no longer in the Middle East because we were thrown out of the Middle East because Iran attacked all of our bases, we didn't defend them, and a lot of these Gulf states don't want much to do with us. When all of that happens, and when Israel's the regional power there and becoming a global power, again, this is out of Netanyahu's mouth, when all of that happens, the people that cheered this on from their backyard in Long Island without a goddamn thought as to why we were doing it, it just felt good to them. It was a way to own the libs by sending troops into a Middle Eastern country. These people are all hopped up on pharmaceuticals and French vanilla coffee creamer, and they have a bloodlust that is insatiable. The suburban American has a bloodlust that is absolutely insatiable. Nothing is enough for these people. Nothing is enough. We're becoming a sexless country. We're a joyless country. Our only joy is in exporting violence and sitting back and watching it. It is the only thing that unites people and gets them excited. They all have a bloodlust. And they want things to blow up, and they want people to get hurt, and they don't care that we bombed a school of Iranian children. They don't care that a Tomahawk missile ripped through a school and killed 165 people, many of them between the ages of 8 and 10 years old. They don't care because many parts of this country are a moral black hole. They are a moral black hole where there is no morality. They're amoral. You say, well, they have bad morals. No, no, no. They have no morals. They're a black hole. Those are the people that are cheering on what's happening right now in Iran. They cheered on what happened in Iraq. Okay, 20 years after that, everyone in this country has less money on average. People do not own homes. People do not still don't have health care. People are in no better position financially than they were, except the top tier. And those are the same people that cheered that on. They're cheering this on. And here's the president now endorsing who I believe he, and I called this years ago, I said Logan Paul, but it'll be Jake. But I imagine that is what will come next. That is the inevitable next move here, is this.
Got us. Trump's got us. God bless Love you, Kentucky.
No, he's a great guy. He's a courageous guy and a talented guy. He's a hell of a fighter, too, by the way. And I just want to say, I predict, I'm going to make a prediction.
Look at the people. Can you just pause this for a minute and look at the people that are still in this crowd? Look at the people. And I feel bad for some of them, but I really don't for others. Look at the people that are left in this crowd. I mean, none of them look happy anymore, by the way. This is the end. Because you're all broke, by the way. Their standard of living hasn't gone up. It's declined. None of them understand what the hell's going on. They just know that they're in too deep. They're just in too deep to get out. And that's the face of people that are in too deep. That's not the face of people that are having a great time. That's not the face of people that are really excited about the direction of the country. This is the face of people that kind of got bamboozled and they're still showing up to the rally. And then he's bringing out Jake Paul and they're going, what's going on? Let's listen to a little bit of this here.
Prediction that you will be in the not too distant future running for political office. Okay. And you have my complete and total endorsement, okay?
So they clap. The people in Kentucky clap in a very defeated way. When Trump says about Jake Paul, he goes, you're going to be running for political office. And then some of the people in Kentucky start clapping, and they're happy about that. Let me ask you a question. I like Jake Paul. I have no problem with Jake Paul. I enjoy him. Why would the people in Kentucky who are clapping for this think Jake Paul would make a good political figure? I'm just asking a very simple question that I'm unsure if I know the answer to. Why do the people in Kentucky think Jake Paul, who, by the way, has left America? Jake Paul, I mean, he lives in Puerto Rico. He's left the continental United States. He lives in a territory of the U.S. to pay no taxes, which, again, God bless. But the people in Kentucky, it's so puzzling me when Trump goes, I want to hear that again. Bring it back again that you're going to run for political office.
I just want to say, I predict, I'm going to make a prediction that you will be, in the not too distant future, running for political office. Okay. And you have my complete and total endorsement, okay? No, that's what we want. He's an incredible guy.
It's a mixed reaction. You know, there are people that are clapping for it, and I question their sanity. Again, I don't know why they think he would be a good political figure. I don't know. But this is very interesting because the people behind him now, a lot of them are really not, it's not exciting anymore. It's not fun. This is, you've been at a party too long. You know, I have friends that have been at the party too long here with him. And the thing about Trump's entire thing is the party's never about you. It's his party. And, you know, when you first get there, it's fun. It's like hanging out with a rich kid, where in the beginning it's really fun because they're excited to show you everything and let you use some of their toys. But then eventually the rich kid's like, well, this is all mine. So when are your parents picking you up? Like, you know, that's where we're at now in this, in the MAGA cult movement. You still have the 5D chess QAnon people who are permanently schizophrenic. There's nothing to be done for them. You have people like I know, friends of mine who like live in Florida and are just completely out of it and truly are kind of moral, again, a black hole. You know, they just don't care what he does. They just like him and they don't really, they're not paying attention. They're not paying close attention. And, you know, and then you have, you know, some of these people that are standing here behind him, you can really tell by their face that they have been at the party for too long and it's not fun. You know, a lot of these people go back and work at a rest stop after this. And I'm not saying anything negative about people that work at a rest stop, but make no mistake, a lot of them will go back and work at a rest stop in Kentucky. It's not a fun job per se, right? So they're here to celebrate him and Jake Paul and all these people. And then they will leave this rally and they will go to their house and they will change into their work clothes and they will work the graveyard shift at a rest stop. And they will tell their friend at the rest stop that they saw Trump. They went to the rally. And their friend will be like, yeah, what'd he say? And they'll be like, yeah, he's not that funny anymore. Like, Jake Paul was there. You know, this is what it's becoming. You know, it's becoming people that are just, I don't know what any of them are getting out of it. I don't know what any of these people are getting out of it anymore. They elected this guy, and then this guy is basically letting Jared Kushner and Bibi Netanyahu just carve out the Middle East, do whatever the hell they want, just make deals. And it's tough because I know it's really, really hard to admit you got God. It's really difficult to admit that. Almost no one can admit, it's very hard to admit you've been taken advantage of by someone that you respected, by someone that you liked and respected. This is actually a very difficult thing to do. It's easy to say you got scammed by some stranger, but someone that you trusted, respected, liked, and a lot of these people here, you know, in the back of their head, they can't admit it to themselves yet, but they feel like they've been taken advantage of. This is not about them anymore. It's dawned on them. They go, this is not really about us. This is about a lot of other things, but it's not about us. It's not about us. Now I want you to get up in the bunkers in Israel, the dancing. I want you to compare a group of people who aren't getting what they want with a group of people who are getting what they want. And the difference between the way that they react to it. In Israel, obviously, there is a war between the United States, Iran, and Israel. Most people know this. And Israel's dealt with terrorism for a long time. They've been at war with all of their neighbors forever. So they have bomb shelters, underground bomb shelters, bunkers that people go to. And they're throwing like raves in them. They're having like parties. They're enjoying themselves. And many people are saying, well, hey, that's in bad taste. You know, American servicemen are dying. By the way, people in the IDF are dying. Their own brothers and sisters are dying. Americans are dying. Iranians' children are dying. And that being in a bomb shelter, you shouldn't have a dance party in the bomb shelter. That's what some people would say. But I just want to show you, this is when people get what they want. This is how they act, because this is the war that Israel wanted. They wanted Iran gone. And so whereas you have the people in Kentucky that are kind of, you know, just standing there in the back, and Trump's like, Jake Paul, he's going to run. And then they're just like, I guess that's our, we have to support that. And the joy is draining from their face in Kentucky because it's not about them and they know that. But let's see, let's go to somewhere else and let's see if they're having a good time here. Now, this is the vibe when things are good. You see the difference? When things are good, yeah. When things are good, you have a rave and a missile silo. That's when things are good. Because let's give credit where credit is due. Israel's got us into this pretty much. Again, that's from our own Secretary of State. And they're getting what they want. They're getting what they want. So why not throw a party? Nobody's throwing a rave in Kentucky. Nobody's throwing a party standing there behind Donald Trump and Jake Paul. Nobody's doing that because they're not getting anything out of it. They're not getting a goddamn thing out of it. Now, the lying that you have to do to tell people in this country that they are getting something out of this war, the hurdles you have to jump through are some of the craziest things that I have ever seen in my life. When I watch people, I totally understand why Israel wants it, why Netanyahu wants it. I totally understand that. I get why Jared Kushner wants it. I get why people in the United States, like Ted Cruz, want it. But the people in Kentucky, I mean, that are going to the Trump rally, the people in Kentucky who are going to the Trump rally, like these people right here, to sell to these people that they're getting something out of this. It is the only, that religious angle of like the third temple and the rapture and all that stuff, the Christian Zionism. You have to go to these people and go, well, don't you want the Messiah to come back? You don't have to go to the rest stop. If the Messiah comes back, you don't have to go to work. So this is that. This is what we're doing. Go, oh, I thought we were like gonna, I thought our taxes, I thought like the cost of groceries is gonna go down. No, we're ending the world. We realized we couldn't do any of that. Let's be honest. You think your groceries are coming? The price of a house is never coming down. We're ending the world. I mean, it's pretty simple. There's zero way you're ever going to afford a house. Let's rapture you all. Let's rapture you all. It is the only shot you have at a good life right now is to hasten the rapture. That is, right now, the foreign and economic policy of our country currently right now is the rapture. It is, that is the foreign and economic policy of our country, is the rapture. You're out of here. We're all going. The Messiah is coming back and he's going to figure it out, because we don't know how to get these houses cheaper. We don't know. We do not know. We do not know. When the Messiah gets here, he'll figure it out and he'll rapture some of you, and some of you won't get raptured. We don't know. It depends on what book, what interpretation. But what we do know is if we don't have the rapture, Jake Paul's going to be president. So what do you want? You want the rapture, or you want Jake Paul to be the president? I don't. Or does Jake Paul bring on the rapture? That's another great question. Does Jake Paul bring on the rapture? Here's Pete Hegseth, who is a drunk and a failure, making a big mess of this war, killing children in Iran, a truly contemptible figure who should resign, war criminal Pete Hegseth, friend of the show. But he really should resign. They are massacring children in Iran. It is disgusting. But Pete Hegseth is a, U.S. troops were told Iran wars for Armageddon and the return of Jesus. So this is what we've got. We've got some real fun people here that are trying to egg on World War III. I fully believe this is the plan. I think they want World War III. I believe they want World War III. I think the Epstein documents, it started to expose things that could not see the light of day. I think this economy is in much deeper trouble than people think. And I think that this is the plan. The plan is like, we need some kind of prolonged conflict to sink a bunch of people, money, and sadly lives and things like that. Let's take a break from this for a minute, because I do want to cover these Dubai influencers, life of luxury, interrupted by Iran strikes. You know, Dubai, which we've talked about on this show as, you know, it's the fun kind of, you know, tax haven for international criminals. A lot of people from the UK and America and all over Europe have gone to Dubai, have fled to Dubai over the past few years. Now all of those people are experiencing trauma because a lot of the luxury hotels that they are living in are blowing up. So imagine going to Dubai to just not pay taxes, to just be rich, to just kind of divorce yourself from any commitment to your fellow man, to your nation state, going to Vegas, that, and I have no problem with Dubai, but going to a, you know, a Vegas-like paradise designed for you, you know, kind of a morally questionable rich person that just wants to live out the rest of your days in a tranquil tax haven. And then a war breaks out. Take a look here. These are the Dubai influencers dealing with this.
I'm actually so scared. I'm in JDC right now, and I can see. Oh, no, 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 no. Not meant to be happening here. Right. Everyone just chill out. Biggest concern is that people, like, I don't want anyone getting hurt. You know what I mean? Like, I've been hearing loud explosions sort of like in the background all day.
Now, stop that for a minute. When she's like, it's not meant to be happening here, because she's like, this is not that Middle East. This is not that Middle East. This is the Middle East with the Eggs Benedict. This isn't that Middle East. This is the Eggs Benedict Middle East. And she is standing on her balcony watching missiles. And they say that Dubai is finished now. I don't know if that's true, but they say that a lot of these expats are never going to go back, that they've been so traumatized or unable to handle it, but they feel vulnerable now. They don't feel safe in this tax haven of international criminals. That's the thing. The thing about Dubai, it was a safe place for international criminals. And when that veil of safety is pierced, it's very hard to get it back. Why should international criminals have to deal with any type of insecurity? They have families, international criminals. They absolutely have families. So if you go live in Dubai to launder money, to shield yourself from the laws of your home country, to escape warrants, whatever, you're going there to have a good life. You want to have a good life with your family, who you left your home country because you were wanted. And you went to Dubai to live in a place that allowed you to operate a business, you know, in a questionable way, and just chill. Like she said, why doesn't everybody just chill out? And now you're sitting there and there are missiles coming in. There are missiles coming in. And all of the narco traffickers, human traffickers, Bitcoin scammers, hustlers, all of these people, all of the legacy institutional money, all of the stuff that is escaped and went to Dubai is now having to face this crisis where their luxurious life of crime is being upended. Let's watch a little bit more of this.
The sound shakes the windows. I don't know how to explain it. It's like the weirdest sound ever. And now I'm seeing them. This is not fun, guys. We're supposed to be in the safest place. Like,
right. I mean, this is Ghislaine Maxwell.
I love the UAE. I love being here. I feel so safe all the time, and now I can see it. Like, please just stop.
Yeah, I mean, they're unhappy. They're unhappy and there's nothing to be done about it. And this is going to, oh no, what's happening to her? What's this? Oh dear.
It's 8:20 and there's another bomb that's gone off.
Oh my God.
Everybody can see, but this black smoke over here. All this here. Well, as you can see, she just woke up. I'm in JVC. I'm in JVC, and another one's just gone off.
By the way, stop it for a minute. How much longer should society go on for? You know what I mean? Like, whenever I get upset about like what's inevitably coming, how much longer should this woman has so many injections in her face? This is the craziest thing I've ever seen. I mean, she's sitting in a hotel made by slaves who get literally whipped. And you know, she's just watching. She's like, oh, there's a fire. Oh, there's a fire over there. Oh, darling. how much longer can this civilization go? I mean, it's unbelievable. It's completely crazy. By the way, you know, half of Dubai is just like people paying money to literally shit on women. Like a lot of this. And then having women shit on them. There's a lot of that in Dubai. There's a lot of that going on where women are not treated. You know, some of them are treated good, obviously. But there's an underbelly there. There's an underbelly everywhere. But this idea that, and I feel bad for the people there. But there's something oddly not satisfying. I don't want to use that word because obviously I don't want anyone to be take this the wrong way. But there's something interesting about the type of violence that this whole system is built on coming and visiting them. The type of violence that the entire system is built on is now somehow coming back and visiting these people. And they're shocked. They're shocked. You know? They're completely, you know, like beside themselves that the type of violence that we've been watching on screens for a very long time is actually now in their physical reality. And they're like, what? There's a bomb over there. There's a missile over there. Darling, there's a missile over there. Darling. Let's see. Let's watch a little bit more of her.
I just want to get home now. I don't know where it's been hit and stuff like that because people are saying loads of different things. So,
yeah, well, we wish them well. We really do. We wish them well. I mean, I hope the influencers in Dubai find their way back to wherever they're going to go. Explosive device thrown outside NYC Mayor Zoran Mamdani's residence if possible. ISIS-linked attack. The two suspects were just when I get back into town. ISIS shows up. The two suspects were attempting to throw explosive into an anti-Islamic protest. Here we go. CBS News, and we know, and this is why we play CBS on the show. We know we're getting the facts.
Well, New York City Mayor Zoran Mamdani and the city's police commissioner will hold a press conference this morning about the incident over the weekend where improvised explosive devices were thrown during rival protests outside the city's official mayoral residence. Mamdani, the city's first Muslim mayor, denounced the violence and bigotry. Jerika Duncan joins us now with more from outside Gracie Mansion in New York. Jerika, good morning.
Good morning. That scuffle happening right out in front behind me, or right here, I should say, in this area near 88th Street in New York City. And it did not last long. Officials, though, now investigating possibly federal charges on the way. Protesters and counter-protesters of an anti-Islam rally clashed on New York City streets outside Gracie Mansion Saturday. Police allege 18-year-old Amir Balat threw an improvised explosive device into the crowd. You can then see him grab what may be a second device from 19-year-old Ibrahim Kayumi. Balat appears to try and light it before police chased him down the street, tackled Balat, and handcuffed him. Neither device exploded.
Well, Mamdani, and listen, and this is where I think Mamdani actually did a job. You know, he appointed him in his administration. And I think that's the only way to solve this. No, I do. And I think it's nice that Mamdani basically was like, this is a troubled man. And really what he needs to be doing is working for the city and not against it. So Mamdani, those two guys who were throwing explosives, Mamdani has now, they're now working for the mayor, Zoran Mamdani, at City Hall. with his wife, and we'll see. We'll see what's going to happen with all of this. You know, there's too many kids. There's too many people in this country right now who are like sloppy terrorists, like ineffective terror. You know what I mean? Like embarrassing terrorists. Like we have too many like incompetent goons that can't, they're like barely terrorists. They're all like theater kids. Everyone's weirdly become a theater kid that can't do anything. Now, I'm not saying terrorism is good, and I'm not saying that we should be encouraging it at all. I abhor terrorism and all violence. But, I mean, it is kind of like, I mean, could these guys even get on the plane in September? Like, would they even be able to get on the plane? Like, it's just, they're so wildly, look at this goon. He doesn't, look at him. You don't know the cops are that way? You didn't know they were coming that way? Look at this. Look how stupid that, look at this. This is crazy. This is insane. These are incompetent, idiot terrorists. And I'm not saying that they should become better at terrorism, but there's something embarrassing about watching people become terrorists that are so buffoonish that I'm just embarrassed on so many levels. I'm embarrassed they're terrorists, and then I'm embarrassed that they can't even do anything. I'm so embarrassed on so many levels for our country at all times. I don't even know what to do. I don't even know what to do anymore. And these synagogue shootings are horrible. And anyone who's trying to show up to a synagogue or any, listen, all of this stuff is incredibly negative and evil, and any type of identity politics has always been my least favorite thing because it robs people of the only thing that makes them interesting, which is their humanity and their personal story, like what somebody overcame in their life or where somebody's from or what their passions are, what their interests are, whatever. All of that to me has always mattered a lot more than people's identity, their race, religion, sexuality, none of that, you know, age, whatever. Identity politics to me is the full breakdown of civil society. It's tribalism. It's sectarian conflict. It's people throwing grenades at each other in the street. It's people attacking each other's places of worship. It's the degeneration of civil society. It's the opposite of civil society. Civil society is different groups of people that literally create the fabric of a society around shared values, shared ideals. Identity politics is complete the other way. It's tribal warfare. Tribal warfare, and when you see it, the examples of it are always pretty gross. I don't even like them, by the way, when they're not designed to be gross, meaning when they're like, it's like, I'm getting an award. You know, the gay and lesbian, whatever, gives an award to someone. I go, great, whatever. Okay. I'm not angry at that. But again, I look at all of that stuff and I say to myself, at a certain point, do we ever get away from this rabid desire to self-segregate into these groups and we play this domination game of who can dominate who? To me, that's never been interesting to me. And you know, if you're an intelligent person, I don't think it's interesting to you. I think if you're, and I think a lot of the people where it's super interesting to them, they're using it as leverage to get something, you know? And they want to, whatever the case may be, whether they're far to the left, far to the right, whatever identity politics that has completely taken over, I think a lot of people see that as a necessary path to power. I think they see it as a path to power. I think that's what identity politics is. At its core is a path for some people to attain power by building a power base of people that are, you know, aligned on these, you know, immutable characteristics, whatever, you know, I'm a man, I'm white, I'm Jewish, I'm Muslim, I'm gay, I'm straight, I'm black, I'm a woman, whatever. And all of that to me is not ideal. So when you look at all this stuff, and that's why probably the only way to fight this is to have a world war where we eliminate half the population. And I thought about it, and I think, unfortunately, what I've come to is that in order to kind of reverse the tide and get people to remember what is important, we have to have a world war where we eliminate 3.5 billion people. I don't think that there's another way to do it. When I look at the rise of identity politics and how troubling that is, the only course of action that I could think of would be a world war that would eliminate half the population in a period of 24 months. How many people live on Earth? 7.5 billion? That needs to be whacked in half. Population data of Earth, 8.3 billion people. 4 billion of those people need to die in the next 24 months. And I don't say this lightly, and I don't say this to try to be a negative, a Debbie Downer, whatever. I'm saying quite accurately, and I think this has been decided, I don't think I'm breaking news, 4 billion people will have to be killed over the next 24 months so that we can finally start to get back to what matters here. And I think that's the only way to do it. I thought about it in different ways. I thought about, like, you know, it's like, well, we could make turkey more affordable. What are we doing, you know? Eliminate half the population in a global war. A global war. I mean, a James Cameron Avatar-style war where 4 billion people are vaporized. We're going to use nukes. We're going to use nuclear weapons and hypersonic missiles and hydrogen bombs. And large swaths of the planet are going to be uninhabitable for a period of time. But not all of them. Not all of them. In fact, lots of the planet will be just fine. And there's a lot of underground bases that people have been kind of getting ready for this type of event. This is the type of reset we need. Again, I don't want people to get mad at me for this, because every time I say this, when you go to dinner with people and they say, what do you think happens? And I go, I think, quite honestly, we have to eliminate half the world's population in the next 24 months. You would not believe the attitude that you get. Truly, the judgment. And I don't want any of that. I'm simply telling you that with 8.3 billion people all doing their own thing, that's kind of run out. But we can't kill everyone. So we need to eliminate half. And listen, am I open to more than half? Yes. Yes. 8.3 billion people. If we could get rid of, hear me out, 4 to 6 billion people in the next 24 months, and we were left with 2 billion people in a mix of underground and overground, kind of like solariums and kind of nice areas, and we restarted agriculture and technology and all this stuff. We're not going to lose all of that either. We have it. But we just, you know, raw materials-wise, just really kind of eliminated many of the people on the globe, 4 to 6 billion people. And how would we do it? A nuclear war with China immediately. Not immediately, but within a month. And we do a nuclear war with China. Europe will be destroyed, will be destroyed, they'll be destroyed. It would destroy most of life on Earth. And that would just, again, this would be a kind of nice reset. And listen, 5 years from now, the people that are left, and it's not going to be all of us, the people, it might not be me, but the people that are left are going to really appreciate, because no one at that point, when literally half to three quarters of the world's population was just vaporized, incinerated, died horrible deaths. I mean, people walking around, you know, glowing green, nuclear, you know what I mean? Bad. Once that happens, on the other side of this, people are really going to come together and they're going to realize that, you know, there's enough resources for everyone. Then, not now, then they will realize, because there's enough for all of us. There's enough for all of us. And it's going to be amazing. But we just have to get on with that. And I know that's going to be a period of hardship for a lot of people. And my heart goes out to most of them. And it will require the near destruction of all life on Earth. But there's no other way to do it. What else would you do? I don't understand. Like, you could, I guess, prosecute those people that were having sex with kids. But that seems so complicated. They all have lawyers. Just destroy all life on Earth. I don't know what. The housing market's so artificially manipulated. Making homes affordable again, it's really not that easy. And then the boomers are going to get mad because they're going to go, oh, my money's in my house. Why are you stealing my money? So you want them mad at you? Just destroy 6 billion people. If you do that, on the flip side, people are going to be a lot happier. I don't know what else you could do. You could honor international law, bleh, and different bodies and try to come up with diplomatic solutions. I mean, I guess you could theoretically use technology as a way to bridge the gap between people and educate them. Or, very simply, we could destroy all life on Earth. And I think that's the plan. I think that's the plan. I don't understand the other plan. I think it's very simple to just basically make a decision. Make a decision and stick with it. You know? Make a decision and stick with it. Just do it and stop talking about it. And then on the other side of that, everyone left on this planet is going to be happier, wealthier, smarter, more interesting. Do you realize how much more interesting people are going to be when they've lived through what we're about to unleash? Oh, my God. And people you know are going to go, and you might go. But think of what's coming. Because what's coming is such a beautiful rejuvenation. Literally think of it. And if you think they're not having these discussions, you're mentally ill. If you think people aren't saying what I am saying right now, you're crazy. Because it's gotten away from them. Do you see? It's gotten away from them. And they go, it's only going to get, where AI is going to put everyone out of work. So then what do we do? Just a war. Just a global conflict where we, and then people fall in a line after that. Nobody starts chirping. People stop chirping about their rights after a global war. It really reframes what people care about after a global war. After everyone gets their shit rocked, people tend not to scream and yell about what they can post on the internet. They really forget about all that stuff. They really do. They just go, I'm alive. I'm happy. I'll do what you say. Let me do what you say. They become docile and compliant, as they should. You know, most people they know have been, you know, I mean, people are going to be eating each other. I mean, literally, it's going to be that bad. They're going to be eating each other. You're going to see people you know eating other people you know. And after that process, you're not going to complain. You're not going to, after that, you're not going to go, I want to own a house. What? What? Shut up. If you make it through this process, if you're somehow one of the luckier chosen people to emerge into the AI control grid after there's been a massive global conflict, you're not going to complain. Take your little crypto thing you get, take your little lab-grown food, enjoy it, and just live and work at the data center, or do whatever. But it's not going to work with 8.3 billion people. And it may not even work with all these nation states. We might have to do something else. We might have to have three regions and have those. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it's going to work with people like, I'm Poland and we're going to tell you how to. And it's like, no, no, no. So I'm super bullish about what's coming after a 24-month period of global death. No, I am. And spring has sprung. And I am. I will not be. No, truly. I'm not going to be one of these people who's a doom and gloomer. I believe that people's values will align after a period of mass death and chaos, which is clearly in the planning stages now. And by the planning stages, I mean being executed in front of your eyes immediately. And after a 24-month period of global death, chaos, you will then appreciate your life. People are going to, there's going to be just 1 year of memorials. Once the big war stops, it'll just be years and years, like 2 years of just memorials of people being like, oh, remember that? Remember that one? Remember when China came into California? Remember that? Remember when the Chinese jets flew in to California and just started lighting up LA? Remember that? And then after that, no one's going to be like, you know, I got my script. No one's read my script. You know, it aligns you in a different way. And it's going to be, I think it is in the beginning stages of it. I'm excited about it. I think it'll be tough. I'll be honest. I think it'll be tough because it will require a massive depopulation and most of the country will be unlivable. And most of us will die in horrible ways. But on the other side of that, people are going to, they're going to get the program. Finally, they're going to get the program. They're going to be like, let's stop focusing on where are the files? Where are the people that raped the kid? Like, it's like, what? Just shut up. You're here. And it's going to be much easier on the other side of that. But we need that. And everyone will look like this. Play this thing. Because this is what everyone will look like on the other side of the 24-month mass death.
I live in a luxury condominium in downtown Miami. The penthouse.
This kid seems so sad.
My name is Clavicular. I'm 20 years old. I believe in looks maxing. The idea of maximizing physical attractiveness by any means necessary in order to ascend. In the morning, if my jaw looks a little weak, I'll bone smash to strengthen it. My ratios are nearly golden now. Testosterone for muscle growth. Dioxin as for appetite suppression. Glutathione for health maxing. Peptides for anti-aging and collagen production. Melanotan 2 for healthy glow. IGF-1, HGH. Retisertide for leanness. Butasteride and minoxidil for hair maintenance. When it comes to ascension, if you're not looks maxing, you're not life maxing. And if you're not life maxing, you're nothing. The wait is over. March 13th. Mog World Order begins. 30 days, 24/7 live on Kick. Welcome to the new era.
Yeah, you know, I mean, again, I'll say it again, folks. I'll say it again. After watching that, I'm even more actually dedicated to a 24-month period of mass death. And then it's just starting again. And then every time we start again, we'll get to this. That's the funny thing about life. Like, every now and then, we'll get to a guy in Miami just smashing his face with a hammer. That's the end of civilization. That's actually how it ends every time. Every time you get to clavicular. Every time you get to a guy who's, like, really, really hot but seems really unhappy, and he's in this weird prison he doesn't understand, and, like, every time life gets to this point, there's just a mass war and a global death, and then the lizards go underground, and then they start it again, and then every time they're like, I wonder if it'll get different. I wonder if it'll be different, and then every time it just still ends with clavicular, and then a bunch of influencers in Dubai go, darling, there's missus everywhere. I'm trying to eat breakfast, darling. Where the missiles? And every time it ends with Trump endorsing Jake Paul in Kentucky in front of a bunch of meth heads that just came from a rest stop. Every time it goes here. And then every time when we get to this point, when Trump endorses Jake Paul, that's the real red heifer, by the way. That's the real Third Temple, is Trump endorsing Jake Paul in Kentucky in front of a bunch of people that are trying to save up money so they can try the big arch. Okay? That's the real Third Temple, is that right there. Every time that Trump endorses Jake Paul, we've reached the end of civilization. And then it starts again. And the aliens are shocked. They go, we don't know why it always ends this way. They go, we wish it would go somewhere else. But it doesn't, because it's what the people want. It's what the people want. So, you know, eventually it's like the Begonia movie. You know, those aliens are like, well, we'll just pull the plug on this planet eventually. But this is kind of a Sumerian mythology thing where it's like it does keep starting over, and then it keeps getting to this point. We feel like we're near the end. I don't know if we are or not, but it certainly feels that way. And it's at this point when people realize, because here's the theme of this whole episode. Most of these people don't want to be alive anymore. They don't even realize it. None of that stuff, and I'm all for people being hot and in shape and whatever, but none of that stuff that kid's doing, none of that is life in any conceivable way. These people that don't have a pot to piss in, watching a billionaire endorse a multimillionaire for president, this is not life, and you can see it on their face. These influencers in Dubai who are sitting there in a slave-built hotel watching missiles rain down on their cabanas, and they're like, oh, I just want to go home. It's not supposed to be happening here. That isn't life. So life always gets to a point where it's not life anymore. That's what we've learned. Life always gets to a point where it's no longer life. And at that point, everyone's just going through the motions, waiting for something to take them out of this. Some force greater than them to take them out of it. And that's the point that we've gotten to now, where everyone's walking around and everyone's kind of going, why are we still doing this? Why are we still doing this? And that's when I think a force greater and larger than ourselves tells us, well, you're not going to be doing this for long. Bye-bye.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.